Hey, it's Tony Bruschi, and this is our Week in Review. Over the weekend, taking a look back at some of the most compelling conversations and stories that we've covered for you of the last week. Brand new episodes back Monday morning, bright and early, 5 a.m. here on the podcast.
Murder in the Morning from the Hidden Killers Podcast.
You know, all of us in relationships, in life, when someone passes away, someone that we cared about, oftentimes their belongings are given to those who are closest to them, sometimes as a remembrance, sometimes as a tribute, whatever it may be. It's a little trinket, a little way you can look back and go, you know, I remember that person. That person meant something to me. For example, I'm sitting here in my office, and right up on my wall is my grandparents' clock that I heard growing up all the time. Got my grandpa's old radio over here that he had bought during the war, and it has world band on it. It doesn't work anymore, but it's an old radio. Just things like that. Taylor Shaw Business decided to collect a head and a penis from the man that she killed.
You know, Tony, we all have preferences.
We make our choices, and apparently that's what she wanted to keep. She even said in court just the other day, she wanted to keep some parts she liked. Literally what was said. Wanted to keep some parts that
she liked. So with me being in the veterinary field, we do paw prints. Like when we euthanize an animal and, you know, we take their paw, preferably after they're gone, because you have to press really hard, and put it in some clay. And it's a little imprint that you get to have as a keepsake. Mm-hmm. What she did, that's fucked up.
Yeah, you're not like, you are talking about giving an imprint of the paw. You're not talking about cutting the paw off and turning it into a keychain, like a rabbit foot. Yeah.
Now, I will say this. I still do work for a euthanasia company. They do in-home euthanasia. Wonderful group of people. I had a client once who said he wanted us to remove some teeth from a deceased animal because he wanted to keep some of the teeth.
Why?
We're like, I don't know. I've got a tooth in a little cup from one of my other cats that it was extracted, and they give it to you after the procedure, which I'm not quite sure why. Mm-hmm. I still have it because I feel like I don't want to throw it away.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a little twisted. I mean, I've got like a little baggie of cat fur from my previous cats. And I mean, is that sick and twisted? I don't know. It's just, but it's weird. I can't imagine having like something mummified or, you know, some taxidermy pet, you know, it just doesn't make sense. So what was she planning on doing with the penis and the head?
Well, it's parts that she liked. So I don't know what she thought she would be able to do with those parts of the dead boyfriend. I'm still kind of stuck on the teeth thing. I think some of that is, it's like one generation does it, then the next is like, well, I guess that's what we're supposed to do. And then you keep, like, for example, my mother, when they came to visit, I don't know, handful of years ago, she's always bringing me stuff from their house, because I don't live anywhere near them. But a lot of my, you know, childhood things are there, and so she's slowly offloading it onto me. One of the things that she offloaded the one time was a little tin full of my teeth.
Oh,
my baby teeth.
I'm assuming.
Yes, now the time we got into a cage fight, and she took a couple out. But no, yeah, it was baby teeth, and the thing is, I kept Harper's baby teeth too, and I don't know why. I don't know what on earth. I have no plans for them. It's not like we're going to make a necklace someday out of this. It's just like, and I don't know what that is, and I don't know why that is. I don't keep anything else like weird like that, but I kept those because I remember my mom did. And it was usually after the tooth fairy came that I would take the teeth, and I just threw them all into like a little thing every time. Like a little envelope was put into a little, you know, like Rubbermaid thing. And that's where they sit. And it is kind of creepy. It is. It's a little creepy, a little weird. But I don't. Maybe it's not weird. Maybe it's fairly common. But keeping a penis in a head, that is a little bit weird. Prominent among the witnesses in trial just the other day was Dr. Vincent Tranchita from the Dane County Medical Examiner's Office as the forensic pathologist who performed the post-mortem on Thyron. The doctor said that he offered a chilling testimony detailing the victim's injuries and exacting method of the dismemberment. And I guess trigger warning if you don't like hearing about people being dismembered. Here's what he testified about, explaining the severity of the wounds identified on the victim. We have decapitation. We have dismemberment. We have transcension of the torso. Not even quite sure what that means. The body has been eviscerated. We've entered inside the body through various cuts through the abdomen and between the ribs where the victim's organs have been removed, largely one by one. The doctor noted that the act of dismemberment would have taken several painstaking hours, clearly performed post-mortem due to the lack of hemorrhage associated with the injuries. As harrowing as this evidence is, it is important and it cannot be overstated for understanding the sequence of events leading up to his death. The depth of information it provides also casts a spotlight on the complexity of the task faced by forensic examiners who collected the remains from the Stony Brook Lane residence and the minivan Shabusiness was reportedly driving. Toxicology reports found traces of cocaine, methamphetamine, and marijuana in the victim's system. However, the doctor admittedly stated that these substances were not the cause of his death. It's my medical opinion that the cause of death of Shad Thyron is strangulation, and the manner of his death is homicide, is what he testified in court. Further insights were shared by Lieutenant Tom Buckman of Green Bay Police Department, who described Shabusiness's arrest captured on body cam video. Her apprehension occurred after the gold minivan she was known to be driving was located outside an Eastman Avenue apartment. She appeared to be in shock or very surprised to see us. I'd equate it to a deer in the headlights kind of look or a child caught with their hand in the cookie jar, he said.
Such a Wisconsin thing to say, a deer in the headlight.
Very, very much so. It's a deer in the headlights, you know. She got caught dismembering her boyfriend, went and had an old-fashioned down at the supper club and came back home, and, you know, we got her.
After the fish fry.
After the fish fry, you know. We're going to delay the sentencing till after family night at the Packer game. We got some of those tickets. Following her arrest, Shabusiness was taken to Green Bay Police Department. A series of images displayed to the jury documented her blood-stained attire. The state's crime lab's DNA arrests, or analyst rather, Kevin Scott, confirmed the blood was her boyfriend's, adding to the mounting body of evidence against Shabusiness. Further captivating the courtroom, former detective from Green Bay Police Department divulged findings from Shabusiness's cell phone. It was revealed that the defendant had searched for notorious, this is where it gets even more insane. She searched for notorious serial killer Jeffrey Dahmer, cadavers, and Satan. So, maybe my thing the other day where I said, this is pretty close to being evil. I mean, it is an act of evil, but now I'm starting to wonder if it's like, is she possessed? Leading the defense to motion for a mistrial, despite the alarming associations and potential prejudicial impact, Brown County District Attorney David Lassie defended its relevance, the judge taking note of the mistrial motion, but ultimately denying it. Ask me this person, if you're looking at her and watching her during this the trial, she's not mentally there. She's just not. And should she pay for her crime? Without a doubt. I'm in no way saying she should be not guilty and be freed, but I don't know what we're doing here. This is someone who, if you asked her, you know, what the color of the sky is, she'd probably say, you know, red or something. It's just, she doesn't seem to be there. I don't know that she is actively, competently participating in her own defense. And that is a staple of being able to be competent in trial. Other than just showing up like she's doing right now, I really wonder, what are those conversations going on behind the closed doors with her and her attorney? Are they making any sense?
Well, and the thing is, she doesn't seem coherent, and that's what you're getting at. But I mean, not just on a mental level, but on a physiological level, she to me, and I watched as much of the trial as I could stomach this morning, she seems like she's not cognizant of anything. She looks slumped down. I mean, she looks drugged.
Yeah, and she may
be. I don't know if they're medicating her or if she's snuck something. I don't know.
Well, that's quite often what they do when it comes to something like this. They will medicate the individual so they are able to stand trial. But is that, in my guesstimation, or my question would be, is that a fair way of saying this person is competent to stand trial by drugging them up so they can't act out how they normally would without the drugs? I would almost say any other major decision in life, if you were really drugged up and they found that out and you signed something, they'd say this is not valid. They were under the influence of something at that time and they weren't all there to make that sort of choice. But it seems with this, if we can get her to be competent and not move around or attack anybody for a couple hours, she's competent. She also has, if you've noticed, she has that shock belt on her. Did you catch that?
Oh, I didn't notice. What I was paying attention to was her in this yellow banana looking paper suit that she was in.
I got to see that part, and we'll have the audio for that as well. It should actually already be up by the time this airs. Hearing some of that testimony, or hearing some of the audio of her interrogation is what it sounds like. With the Brown County deputies in Green Bay talking to her about the crime itself. And she didn't really seem to understand what was going on, did she?
No, not at all. And there were times where she was like laughing like somebody had told her a joke.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing funny about any of this. I can't imagine, throwing out a little dig or a joke or something. It was so inappropriate. None of it just sounds sick.
Yeah. I this is just nuts. Hey, by the way, and this is something Stacy discovered yesterday or early today. I don't know. I read it early today when I saw your text. Holy shit. So we're in this case and we're like, okay, so this is the boyfriend that she killed. She was married. She is married. She has a kid as well. And we have a letter that was supposedly written by the boyfriend, although it does look like female handwriting. Maybe he had someone else write it for him, but it's posted on his Facebook page. And we're going to go through that and some of the other postings and also answer the question, how the hell did you get the name Shabusiness?
Yeah.
That's coming up in our next segment right here on Murder in the Morning. Stick around.
You're locked into the Hidden Killers podcast.
Want more? Start binging on all of our true crime podcasts right now through Apple Podcasts and get an ad-free experience when you sign up to be a True Crime Today Premium Plus member exclusively on Apple Podcasts.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast dropping soon.
Press subscribe now.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast
with Tony Bruschi